Welcome to episode 136 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast, recorded live July 24th, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, we go through some of the high-level features of Azure SQL Managed Instance and how it compares to SQL in Azure IaaS against Azure SQL Single and Elastic Databases. Then we get into some of the configurations you'll want to pay attention to when bringing Azure SQL Managed Instance into your environment.
Happy rainy. Why do we always record on rainy days in Florida? Is it rainy where you are?
Because it rains every day in Florida.
But it's the sunshine state.
It is the humid sunshine state. And all that humidity means the moisture has to come out of the air at some point. Like today and yesterday and maybe a little bit tomorrow.
The day before that, my pool's almost overflowing.
Well, go do some cannonballs.
I know. Except then I get water under my pavers and it all erodes. It's first world problems, I suppose.
It's a vicious cycle, I tell you.
It is. But it is a rainy Wednesday afternoon, not a Friday morning. We're mixing up our recording schedule. Got to keep each other on our toes, right?
Something like that. Or we're just both so busy with our other real jobs that this is the only time we can do it.
That's true, because you're taking off on our normal recording time and then, well, my next time away is not for work. It is a friend's wedding. But yes, yeah, so we have a busy few weeks coming up, so we just sneak it in when we can. Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. So what topic should we sneak in today?
I think today we're going to talk about something Azure-based, which will be fun because we know how much you like to get into that space. But you've been recently working with some clients around a not quite new, but might be new to some people out there, product in the database as a service space called SQL Managed Instance or Azure SQL Managed Instance or Azure SQL MI or Azure SQL MI, whatever we want to call it today.
Yes, I think I've even seen it abbreviated as just Azure SQL, even though there's like different flavors of it. It's like Microsoft really wants to push you into this Azure SQL MI now or Managed Instance. And I've been dealing with it. I didn't even realize it had kind of snuck up and popped up out there until I started working with this client about it. And then I was like, huh, this is rather interesting. So we're going to put on like a SQL DBA / IaaS hat because, well, it's Azure SQL. Well, you may have dealt with like the Azure SQL databases in the past. This Azure SQL Managed Instance is almost more like managing Azure IaaS, but not quite. It's kind of somewhere in the middle, kind of from what I've seen and how it's all worked and things you need to think about.
Well, let's kind of dial that one back a little bit and maybe kind of break down your options that are out there because it gets really confusing, I think, with the introduction of this product and where it sits and what it potentially looks like. So if you think about just needing to run SQL Server, so we're talking Microsoft SQL Server, MS SQL, in Azure today, you effectively have two options. So do you want to be in an infrastructure service or do you want to be in a platform service? So, you know, do you want to own the database instances and the underlying operating system and updates and management of the SQL engine itself? So go into infrastructure as a service and run SQL Server on your virtual machines. Or do you want to use database as a service and have Microsoft run that SQL engine for you and and maintain the underlying OS and patching and things like that along the way. So I think, you know, everybody, if you've done MS SQL, you're pretty familiar with SQL Server. You've got that. And you go like, all right, I know how to run SQL Server on a virtual machine. So one of the things that happened was Microsoft came and said, well, now we have this platform service called Azure SQL Database. And Azure SQL Database for a long time was a SQL-like product. So it does not feature 100% compatibility with on-premises SQL Server. There are just features that aren't available to you. It has a different burst model for compute, all those kinds of things. And when you think about going to the cloud, one of the interesting things that starts to happen is you really look to optimize. And one of the best places to optimize is get yourself out of managing things like operating systems and underlying system patches. But you couldn't do that with SQL Land because lots of us have databases that leverage features in SQL Server that were not compatible with Azure SQL. So Microsoft's answer to that was, let's keep Azure SQL Database, but let's come out with a new offering and or a new SKU within that product. And they call that Managed Instance or MI. So MI is a unit of compute that we kind of purchase as customers. It is still a database as a service. So there's no Windows Server or for us to RDP onto and manage. Somebody else is still managing OS patching and kind of database engine patching and things like that, but it is about as close as you can get. Like Microsoft frames it up as near 100% compatibility. So it's close, like it's a lot closer than Azure SQL databases, managed instance to IaaS SQL than, you know, you could traditionally get to in the past. So now you have this option as a customer to potentially go out and say, hey, I'd love to do database as a service and go ahead and have access to that. What do you got out there for me? Well, I can do single database. I could do something like an elastic pool, maybe if my database doesn't need those features of on-prem SQL Server that aren't compatible with that. Or now we can go into managed instance and have some dedicated managed compute around that. And I think one of the reasons this is kind of a good one to get into now is when you go into the Azure portal, for the longest time, when you went into, say, the create experience, so you just go to the portal, you go create a new resource, and you say, hey, I'd like to create a SQL database. For a long time, that option, the default, was always going to come back with something like one of those Azure SQL databases, either a single database or an elastic pool. So it would kind of put you into this different compute model, you know, this shared compute model. Now what they've started to do is they've started to actually default to managed instance. So to some more dedicated compute where you're potentially leveraging pricing based on vCores or other kind of per hour, per second billing, depending on the service that you land in. So I think a lot of customers are just maybe going to end up here just by accident sometimes.
Yeah. It's interesting because this one does tend to be, I don't even know that I'd say a little bit more expensive. I think it's quite a bit more expensive than the original database model because, like you said, this is a lot closer to more of that on-prem SQL. You might be licensing per vCore. It's even close enough to that model that if you do have existing SQL servers, you can use some of that hybrid SQL licensing benefit to take your on-prem SQL licenses, apply them to this new Azure SQL managed instance and get a discount on your managed instance with that hybrid licensing model for on-prem SQL server. So it's, and that's kind of where I feel like it's definitely still database as a service, but it's drawing that really fine line between IaaS. The only thing that makes it not IaaS is, like you said, you don't have to manage OS, you don't have to manage patching, updates, all of that, but everything else feels like just a standard SQL Server.
Very similar, because you can hook up to it with SQL Server Management Studio, and we'll talk about this one a little bit too. It sits as a unit of compute. It sits on your virtual networks, so it can communicate directly with other infrastructure virtual machines. So if you're looking to make kind of that transition, right, effectively like a rehost to go ahead and get workloads in and potentially optimize them, you might have some options there. So just to kind of talk through pricing, yeah, it is a little bit more. There's multiple generations of this service and multiple service tiers within there as well. So there's Gen 4s, there's Gen 5s. You're picking up V-cores along the way. So you're effectively paying like a per hour price to go ahead and lift some of these things in. Just to give you a sense, so in US East 2, a 4 V-core with 20 gigs of RAM, which includes 32 gigs of storage of consumption a month, is going to run you about $730. Plus or minus a little bit, depending on your discounts and where you sit and what's going on. So you might look at that and say like, huh, $730 is kind of expensive to run a SQL server. Well, depending on how big your IaaS instances are and what you're already paying for licensing and everything else there, you could find that you're very well paying a little bit more because you've probably got two SQL servers in an always on availability group. So, you know, where you had one server, you know, you might, that was $400 a month. You've still got two of them running. So you're paying $800 already, plus your licensing and all the other things that, that come into play there. So I think it makes it a little bit more difficult to kind of rationalize where you go and where you're going to figure out which service you land in along the way.
Right. I think one of the things with the managed instance that I found is you tend to land in there if you want some of the higher performance, because you'll also find certain things that there's actually support for now with the managed instance that you couldn't typically get with the previous Azure SQL. So I know some of the new preview features is you can actually use managed instance now for SharePoint 2016, SharePoint 2019, Dynamics 365 Business Central. Some of those services that maybe had a little bit more stringent requirements tend to be supported in managed instance because, like you said, now you're actually buying set amounts of storage, vCores, memory. You're buying more of that CPU or IaaS type performance with your managed SQL server rather than just kind of this database sitting out here on this server where I think before you licensed it, like I think it was DTUs, which was some unit of measurement and consumption.
Distributed transaction unit. It is, yes, a combination of IO, transactions, CPU, memory. It's kind of like a weird magical number.
It's kind everybody of, asks, they're like, so how do you calculate that? And I'm like, as far as I know, you just kind of start spinning stuff up, see how it performs, and figure out if you need more or less.
So there is a DTU calculator, and there are there is telemetry that you can pull off your existing on-premises SQL instances if you need to, looking at things like maybe disk latency, throughput, understanding connections that are coming into the server. But it is definitely not an exact science to get into DTUs. And then the other thing you've got to consider there is, do you do single databases, or do you do these things called elastic pools or EDTUs, elastic DTUs, which get you into this other burstable compute model and all these other things. So SQL MI is a little bit easier to wrap your head around because it's almost like IaaS, but not quite. So it is pretty warm and fuzzy and comfortable.
Yeah. So some of the other things we had mentioned that we wanted to get into was because this is a little bit more IaaS-y, and you had mentioned already VNets, subnets, connectivity to this, there's a bunch of things from kind of that IaaS hat type perspective that you want to think about if you're going to go with this managed instance route around how you architect your network. Because while it is still that database as a service, you're still essentially having a SQL server out there that you need to connect to. It has all the documentation, has set endpoints, ports you have to have open. Like you said, this is actually required that it has a dedicated subnet. You have a network security group for it. You have your user-defined routes. You have DNS. You have VNets. You have all of those network requirements that you have to have for the SQL managed instance because it connects right up to one of those VNets in your Azure infrastructure as a SQL server with its own IP address and all those network requirements around it.
Yeah, there's for a managed service that sits so close to you from a compute perspective, there's a lot that you potentially need to think about there and how that comes into your environment. You know, how are we going to, like you said, maybe manage routing? What subnet is that going to sit on? What are my considerations for network security groups with some of that inbound, outbound port and protocol filtering? Like, what does that truly truly look like for me? And can I even go to this service from a high level before you start getting into some of the nuance or complexity of it? Like, does it support my collations or, you know, my general features of SQL Server that I actually might need within a service like this?
Yeah. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. Some of those things to start thinking about, like you said, some of that. And then from that VNet perspective, SumNet size, Microsoft does a really good job of walking you through some of this. And we'll put links to all these articles around connectivity. Again, what ports you have to have open. There's mandatory inbound security rules, outbound security rules. There are a lot of user-defined routes that have to be set up. And thinking about the coalition, like you said, all of that, but then even the subnets and the networking perspective. So Microsoft has a couple different documents out there. Well, there's three different links that you can kind of look at. One of them is just starting out and figuring out that subnet, the networking size, this isn't your typical throw a server out there and give it an IP address and connect to it. Because you're dealing with all those VNets and subnets, if you go into this article and you start looking at the subnet size, Microsoft tells you right off the bat, it's that Azure uses 5 IP addresses in the subnet for its own needs. Each general purpose instance needs 2 addresses. Each business critical instance needs 4 addresses. So you're looking at subnets right off the bat of like 19-ish IP addresses if you want to have 3 general purpose and 2 business critical managed instances on the same subnet. The number of IP addresses adds up really quick. So you need to do some planning up front in terms of what do these subnets and VNets up in Azure look like, and what are all these applications that are going to connect to this managed instance? How are they going to work? Where are they going to sit? Because there's also some requirements there. And even if I already have these applications up there, can I get a managed instance to connect to my existing subnets? Or do I have to kind of re-architect all of this? There's a lot of planning that really should go into this whole process.
just a little bit.
Just a touch.
There's impacts there. There's a bunch of impacts that are potentially going to hit you even outside of planning on the Azure side. So you mentioned, you know, connectivity back to other resources. So what if you have hybrid connectivity and you need to connect on-prem and come through your express route? Well, okay, that means that you need to be in that VNet that's already associated with that express route gateway, and you know, you need to have all that. And there's some limitations here, right? Like so there are things that don't work today in this service. You know, they're on the roadmap, but they're just not there today. So let's maybe say, you know, if you're an enterprise, because let's be honest, it's gonna be like enterprisey companies that are gonna be more looking at features like this.
Yep.
They're gonna come in and they're probably going to have richer networking constructs in place, like hub and spoke networks. So that means they have VNet peers and routing and all sorts of other things in place already. Well, your managed instance, you can't traverse VNet peers with it. Like, it just doesn't work that way today. That's a major consideration for you.
And what I found was it's like global VNet peers. So if you do them in the same region,
correct,
it works. So you can do your whole VNet peering in the same region, but then everything has to be in East US. So if you have something in East US 2 and East US, and you try to peer those VNets, and your SQL managed instances need to connect, or something has to connect to your SQL managed instance, you're just going to be out of luck at this point in time.
Which is, good distinction. So yes, global VNet peers. But again, we're back to those enterprise scenarios where typically you do run in multiple regions because downtime is something you want to avoid.
Yep.
So what does that look like for you? How do you choose to do replication? All these other things. Like, there's lots of it can't be done with this service, but it can only be done if you truly recognize how this service works. You've read the documentation, and let's be honest, because it's still new enough, you've played around with it a little bit and learned about some of the things that maybe even are not documented out there.
Yeah. And another one of these that I found too, when you start looking at this, is the whole custom DNS, which makes sense, right? If you are a large enterprise corporation, you have your own DNS server, all your own entries, and you want managed instance to be able to use your custom DNS server to resolve stuff. Maybe it's internally if you're running hybrid, maybe it's other services you have running externally. There is a whole set of instructions around a custom DNS server, and this one they changed. So 7 days ago, and I don't know if you had a chance to look at this or if you have any idea on why, but there was a change to the documentation. So if you looked at it 8 days ago, 9 days ago, it had an IP address that you were required to have in your custom DNS for proper resolution of your managed instance. Otherwise, if you took this out, your managed instance could actually fail and there would be no way to get it back. So it was like, this IP address needs to be in custom DNS if you're going to switch that VNet that your managed instance is connected to, or that subnet that your managed instance is connected to. If you're going to set that with custom DNS, make sure this IP is in there. That got pulled out of the documentation. The documentation to me wasn't clear why it's not in there anymore. So we can put a link to the GitHub commit where the documentation was changed. There's also some articles out there on Stack Overflow where people were talking about the custom DNS that has the IP address, and then the link to the new documentation. And again, I'm not sure why this IP address got removed. It doesn't really say if it was no longer a requirement or if they changed something around custom DNS. I just know 8 days ago, it absolutely had to be there. 7 days ago, all of a sudden, it just kind of disappeared.
Well, you're moving at the speed of the cloud.
Yeah.
That's why. You know, updates are made and all sorts of things like that happen.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit. So there's some links, but that is one thing to take note of. And going through, again, this documentation, Microsoft says if you're going to switch to custom DNS, make sure you switch all these VNets, subnets, everything to that custom DNS before provisioning your managed instance as a best practice. Just going back into a lot of those things that you really need to think about, make sure you go look through this documentation if you're going to do the managed instances. The other one I ran across too with my client was that custom DNS resolution and actually being able to resolve to an on-premises DNS server. So getting that managed instance, because again, we're talking about a database as a service here, getting that to go look at an internal DNS and resolve to servers on-prem, I have been unable to get that to work. There's some unofficial documentation. Again, I think this was out on Stack Overflow that I found this. We might be able to post it in our notes where people were saying essentially that on-premises name resolution for DNS is not possible. So if you want to do something like set up a linked SQL server or reach from your managed instance and resolve to an IP address of an on-prem server using DNS, it's just not going to be possible. You're going to have to do it by IP address because that DNS resolution just isn't possible right now. Again, I haven't seen anything official from Microsoft, but based on what I've seen in various discussion forums, what I experienced with my client is that does tend to be true, just based on my experience with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a managed unit of compute, it needs to pull from the VNet configuration. So if that DNS server isn't part of the VNet configuration, it's never going to be able to find it in the first place. There's all sorts of little weird things that are going to happen along the way there. And then, like you said, you got to think about how baked is your environment before you put something like this in. Like, has it already come out of the oven and it's just cooling on top of it? Because if you're still in process with some of this and you haven't maybe figured out like where your DNS servers are going to live, where they're going to sit, how they're going to come in, how they're going to be integrated with the VNet, well, as a managed unit of compute, like you can't just go and update the DNS servers on your VNet and everything magically picks it up within like 10 seconds. It's effectively got to reboot on the back end or go through some type of refresh, right? So either DHCP lease needs to go away or, you know, just something needs to happen in there or, you know, a platform update comes through and effectively the servers that host your service get rebooted. So they come back with new IPs, new resolution and all that. But what I think networking with this service in particular is a bit of a weird one, right? It's got a little bit more going on from a moving pieces side of things than maybe some of the other managed compute services where we compare maybe like Azure web apps to app service environment. This one just got more going on. It's a weird one.
Right, because it does, like, a lot of times it'll end up creating its own subnet. Within a VNet, there are some ways you can kind of prep a subnet to put this managed instance into it. But going back to what you said about if you have a really dynamic, moving, kind of figuring all this out environment, this can get really messy really fast. And that's what I ran into with one of my clients. They had a managed instance, they had a bunch of VNets, they had a subnets, they had a bunch of regions spun up, they had their on-prem servers, they did a VPN connection to do hybrid. And then all of a sudden they actually found out all this stuff doesn't talk to our managed instance because of how we architected it. And it ended up being like re-subnetting domains, re-IPing servers, moving VMs between regions. It was not just a straightforward process to get everything talking to each other because of a lot of these different requirements and how that managed instance is structured as kind of that half IaaS, half database as a service type service.
It's a bit of a beast. And I think, like I said, for this one particularly, it's going to cost you a little bit to run it. But if you think you're going to use it, this is one that you don't just read the documentation and hope the documentation is going to be right for. This is one that you turn it on, you play with it yourself, and you get hands-on with it and make sure that you're comfortable.
Absolutely. So go read the documentation, make sure you're aware of this, especially like you said, because this is going to be the new default. Or if this isn't something you want, be aware that this is the new default. You might have to switch to go back to kind of that old database as a service model rather than this database managed instance as a service type model.
It's a little bit of a weird one. And one of the things that happened here too is, you know, we talked about cost a little bit. So this did used to be a lot more expensive. Microsoft has started to bring some of that down with lower core counts and things like that. So you can get into dev test pricing scenarios and some other things. So if you're looking to maybe get your developers hands on with it or you're an IT pro and you just want to play with it at a semi lower cost along the way, like really kick the tires, but not in a production-like scenario, you might have some options there too.
What is the lowest pricing now? I haven't even looked in a little bit.
I would have to pull it up myself. They just had some stuff that they announced about dev test pricing and some of that.
Got it. Oh, here we go. I found it. Maybe this is what happens when you record a podcast on the fly and you just kind of go in and start looking at it as you go. And of course, it's all per hour. I'm not going to take the time to figure it out. Reserved license, 1 year reserved, 3 years reserved. So it looks like you can also do reserved instances with these too, or reserved instance type. It's like 3 years reserved with Azure hybrid benefit. So there are a whole bunch of more of those IaaS type pricing calculations that come in when you start looking at this.
Yeah. So to figure out your price in that case, you'll have to go into the pricing calculator and play around with it. It's effectively someplace up to a 55% discount per hour on the service along the way. But you've got to go ahead and see what that looks like. So they have had this for dev test accounts and PAYGO accounts and things like that. But specifically what they did was they actually opened it up for individual subscribers as well. So like even if you're just a Visual Studio subscriber, now you have the opportunity to potentially get out there and play with that product a little bit.
That's right. I did see that announcement that now you can do it with those MSDN credit subscriptions.
Yeah, now you're kind of covered across the board to at least try it out and see if it's something that you're going to do. Certainly, I would say if you are in kind of more the database administrator space, more the development space, and you're not as familiar with infrastructure, go buy your favorite IT pro a cookie, a donut, a cup of coffee, get them a glass of water, whatever it is. You know, see if you can't pick their brain a little bit about some ways to think about setting this up so you don't immediately fail on network security groups and some of the VNet spread and things like that.
Did you really just say bring your IT pro a glass of water and he'll tell you all of this stuff?
I did. Well, I was going to say bring him a beer, but not everybody drinks alcohol. So, you know.
I was going to say not every IT pro drinks water either.
I am trying to make sure that we're inclusive.
All right. How about beverage? Just a beverage.
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 A libation. Yeah, there we go.
There. Now we've gotten that all straightened out. All right. Well, with that, hopefully that gave all of you guys that are listening a good understanding of Azure SQL Managed Instance, or as good of an understanding as you can get. There, again, there's a lot there. We'll include a bunch of those links to the documents in the show notes. So go check those out. And I guess with that, we'll talk to you again next week, Scott.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Beth.
All right. Thank you. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.